slowly springing to life, and we're on the air. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning into the BAMP podcast. I am your heavily medicated and caffeinated host, Mike Lafferty, and I want to right up front apologize for any issues with my voice. I'm on a more Sudafed than doctors recommend at the moment, fighting a cold here in February in Colorado. But we have a special podcast for you today with a whole bunch of people to talk about Black Panther, the new Marvel movie, as well as Jack Herman from Monkey House Games to talk about Mighty Protectors. I want to call it a new RPG, Jack. We can't really call it a new RPG, can we?
Right. It's been around since 79, so its latest edition just came out last year, but it's old and new at the same time.
And I can't say VNV, or can I say VNV, or how's that work?
Yeah, you can say it. It's Villains Vigilantes. It's Villains Vigilantes 3.0, but it's got the Mighty Protectors subtitle to it.
Okay, but just for the purposes of advertising and publishing, that's Mighty Protectors. And in the description, you can say Villains and Vigilantes, but that's not really the title anymore. Is that fair summation?
Well, it is the title, but in addition to being a new edition of that game, it also features the original campaign universe that Jeff and I have been running back and forth for a bazillion years. So it's kind of more than just the rules this time. It's the rules and our campaign setting.
Okay, cool. All right, well, let me do an introduction of everyone else on the Algonquin Roundtable today. In the luxurious Banff recording Zeppelin next to Jack, we have Jacob. How are you doing, Jacob?
Hello. I am still stuck in Seattle, but that should be altered soon. Otherwise, doing nice and comfortably, thanks to my local friends.
You know, Jacob, it's theater of the mind. I just set up this whole Zeppelin thing, and you go tell us you're stuck in Seattle.
Okay.
Trying to paint a picture here.
The rest of us have cameras. It's just you guys that are the theater of the mind.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. All right, and that sarcastic voice was from Jason Chandro, a.k.a. Dr. Comics. How you doing, Jason?
I guess I was a little sarcastic. I'm sorry. That's a bad first foot to put forward. Hey, everybody. Jacob, why are you in Seattle? Is it for a con?
Yes, I came here for ZoeCon, that's the Zombie Orpheus Entertainment Convention, and this was the first con that I've been invited to as a guest.
Oh, nice.
So
good.
It was an entirely new experience for me, and it was wonderful.
How long were you there?
I was supposed to be here for a week, and that's been extended now to a week and a half.
Well, I'll be there on the 6th.
Okay.
I'll miss you by a few days.
Yep. Well, hopefully all my right. local friends here can get you all set up.
That'd be awesome. I would love to. Yeah.
All right. Hey, just to put it out there, Walt has to turn into a pumpkin at 6:30. So we're going to be a little bit of a time
on this.
I'm sorry.
No worries. Next, Jason, we got Chris McLaughlin. How you doing, Chris?
Oh, I'm just fine. Just getting things together at Go Show Press and very excited about the initial response to that little venture.
Yeah, me too. We're getting ready to launch things real soon, so looking forward to that. And next to Chris, we have the inimitable Walt Rebilliard. How you doing, Walt?
I am a pumpkin. It's all good. What's up?
All right, so I want to start with Chris McLaughlin because he's been a little quiet so far. Chris, Black Panther, what are your thoughts?
Well, I have to admit that when it comes to all the many, many things that Marvel has done over the years, you know, from US1 to NFL Super Pro, you know, I think of all the things they've ever done, the thing that bores me the most is when they do their lost magical kingdom thing. And, you know, I really could not care less about Thor, what happens to Jotunheim or Fartenheim or Gloria Steinemheim or Pepsiheim or whatever they are. It just bores me senseless, quite frankly. And so I'm not exactly the target audience for a film that's about the ins and outs of Wakandan politics, you know, especially after the Inhumans show. Which if you saw that and based on the ratings, no, you didn't. It was just screamingly terrible. So I went in with an open mind. I'm a great, great, great fan of Ryan Coogler as a filmmaker and a great, great fan of Chadwick Boseman as an actor. So I went in on the strength of the filmmakers behind it. And you know, as I was sitting there waiting for it to start, that alone got me to thinking like, wait, I'm sitting here waiting for a superhero movie, and I'm here because one of the most gifted filmmakers currently working in cinema is the guy behind it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I started counting my blessings even before the finger, even before the show started. And I have to admit, my viewing experience was also colored by the fact I saw it at Alamo Draft House, and they have an African-themed special menu for Black Panther. So I was sitting there eating Ethiopian-style breadsticks with garlic yogurt and seasoned butter as I was watching it. So, you know, maybe the film was, you know, trying to ease me into this. But my goodness, let me get my criticisms out of the way first, okay, because there's not a lot of them, okay? It's a little too long. It's probably got about one more fight scene than it really desperately needs. That's it. That's it. That's all the bad I could possibly say about that movie. I don't know if this film could have possibly have come out at a better time. And I don't know if there's anything that people need to hear more than King T'Challa's closing speech. Because as I see people that I love continue to rip each other apart, you know, that closing thought that in times of crisis, wise men build bridges while fools build walls, that just keeps running through my mind. So it's an extraordinarily powerful film. And, you know, a film that takes that classic Marvel dynamic between the uniter and the divider that, you know, we see played out more on a larger stage in the X-Men comics. Seeing that transplanted to the Black Panther mythos was marvelous and so, so well acted. As good as Chadwick Boseman, as big a fan as I am, you really, really, really have to hand it to Michael B. Jordan as Killmonger. I thought that was just an extraordinary performance. I mean, he is arguably the best Marvel villain we've seen yet. And if he's not, let's face it, being in with Michael Keaton and Tom Hiddleston, that's pretty good company. So really, just an amazing performance. Well shot, well acted. The women are extraordinary. I really wish I could do them justice, but I was just overwhelmed by how they did dramatic, how they did funny, how they did subtle. It was funny when it needed to be, just an extraordinarily good film. And the funniest thing about it is there was one other thing I liked about it, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it. But this is one where the internet rose to the occasion. We all have this thing where, you know, every Marvel movie is really a superhero tied to another genre. We've talked about how, you know, Ant-Man was a heist film and so on and so forth. And I feel like such an idiot. I didn't catch on that the guy who gave us Creed basically gave us a Rocky movie. And it's just
That's exactly right.
Yeah. That one I got to give credit to the internet for. Oh, and one final thing. If you have a choice where you see this film, if you're possibly within any reasonable distance of an Alamo Draft House, go see it there. Not only did they have that African-themed menu, they have a don't talk, don't text message with Chadwick Boseman. And it is one of the funniest things in the world. And they actually have a post-credit scene with the don't talk, don't text. And I almost fell down laughing as I was leaving the theater because So just a really, 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 really good film the mark of a good superhero film is that it's a good film that just happens to have superheroes in it. That's why I've always spoken up for The Dark Knight. And this is a good film that just happens to have superheroes in it. Really, really an extraordinary achievement to it. You know? So yes, can't say enough good things about it, but I'll stop here now anyway.
So you're saying you liked it?
Yes. It was, and really, just coming in with like no preconceived notions other than being a fan of Coogler and Boseman. But you know, I just really just extraordinarily good film.
Okay, Jack, what'd you think?
I was just tremendously impressed. I mean, I think this is the best script I've had since Winter Soldier. And you know, I remember when they were announcing that when this was in production, you would see all these stories, this person's in it, that person's in it, this person, and they're like, gee, is the Black Panther going to be in it? but the thing is, but they did an amazing job of taking all those characters and arranging them to where you understood all the factions, you cared about all the supporting characters. There's a lot of moving pieces to that story, a lot of different factions within and without of Wakanda, so... I was very impressed about it. And again, I agree with your assessment that it's essentially a Rocky movie.
I think that that's one of those that's one of the cleverer things about it. And just the idea that the way the story just moves straight forward and doesn't really lose you amongst all the things it deals with. It's structurally it was such a good script. I mean, I love Civil War. But as I think it's been commented on the internet, it's like, you're the villain in Civil War. Explain what your plot is. You can't do it because it's ridiculous. But everything in this was just, I was very impressed with it.
Okay, cool. Walt, what'd you think?
I loved it. Absolutely loved it. I thought the performances were amazing. I love the Dora Milaje. They in many places they steal the film. But one of the things I really liked about it is it really struck me as a film about responsibility, and especially taking responsibility for that which you sometimes don't have control over. I mean, they didn't have control over what happened to Killmonger. They didn't have control over all of these horrible events that they were forced to react to, like the rescue of the slaves, the women who were going to be sold into slavery, stuff like that. It just struck me as a great aspect to an already really fun film, and I think that's where a film like this really transcends just being a superhero movie, is that it gives you a message that you can take with you at the end, like Chris was saying with that wonderful speech at the end. I loved that about coming together versus always going apart. To have a superhero film that gives you that fun aspect to help you remember that, you know, no matter how many different cultures we believe we're from, you know, we all come back to the fact that we're all human and we really should be helping each other. I thought that was a great message in the film. And aside from that, just an absolutely fun film. And I'm going to disagree. I don't think there were enough fights because I really enjoyed not only the fighting style of the Dora Milaje, in their almost Spartan tactics and how they use coordinated attacks to deal with threats. I also loved how the Black Panther was trained and how he was able to maneuver and stuff like that. But I think for me, the best scene in the film, and I loved it, and my wife rolled her eyes at me when I kind of cheered, was the Rhino scene charging Okoye. great.
It reminds me of, I think I paid the film the ultimate compliment as we were driving home. The film has one really obvious plot twist coming. You know that M'Baku's tribe is going to show up and say it helps save the day at the end, but you don't care. You don't care that it's obvious. You don't care that you see it coming. Yeah, and a film that can win you over to that degree is really special.
This is exactly what I wanted to talk about. Can I jump in?
Sure.
I like the movie a lot. The plot is incredibly predictable. And I say that as a guy who is completely unable to guess movie plots. Like, I'm terrible at this. If you put me in a theater and say, and everyone around me is saying, oh, I knew that was going to happen. And I'm like, seriously? You did? Because I don't know shit. When I can tell what's going to happen in the movie, all the way from the, you know, get defeated, the second time he's fighting at the waterfall, of course he's going to lose, right? So that he can come back later. And we've already seen the two costumes, so we know that he gets one. And then, you know, so the plot of this film was completely predictable. However, the plot is not what the movie is about. And so the fact that the plot is predictable does not ruin the movie.
Marvel, I just summed up an awful lot of Marvel movies right there.
Yeah, Marvel films, especially the Captain America films. So let's talk about Winter Soldier and Civil War, because those kind of stand out in a lot of our memories. Marvel likes to pretend that they're going to attack an important social issue during the movie. Like in Winter Soldier, it was the surveillance state. And in Civil War, it was gun control, weapon control, arms control, and the idea of the individual right versus the responsibility of the state. But it's really just a head fake, because by the last 20 minutes of the movie, it's your best friend killed my mom, and everything else doesn't matter. Like, no one, the social issue that the movie is pretending to be about, let's get Robert Redford in here and do a 70s spy thriller. No one gives a shit about any of that for the big climactic special effects battle at the end, the last 20, 30 minutes of the movie. But Black Panther sticks with the social issue. It sticks by its theme all the way to the end of the movie. And I think that's the bravest thing that I've seen Marvel do in a film since maybe the first Iron Man movie, which was incredibly gutsy just because it was the first Iron Man movie, you know? So I had a lot of respect for the film, and I enjoyed it too. And I didn't think that the weak plot was a problem. I watched Creed, and when I was blown away by Creed, I loved that film. And a month later, they said that they'd landed him to direct Black Panther. And I was like, what a brilliant move. Like, and I have been looking forward to this movie ever since. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was courageous, which is not something that you hear people say about a Marvel film very often.
Well, cool. Jacob,
you know, one of the comments that I posted on social media and deleted because because it seemed needlessly provocatory to some people, sure, on my friends list was one superhero movie factory went out and got the guy who made Fruitvale Station and Creed. The other one went out and got the guy who made Sucker Punch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just saw the honest trailer for Justice League today, and I was both amused, and I had every urge I had to see that movie completely satisfied. So,
all right, Jacob, you're last.
Jacob, yeah, what do you think, bud?
Wow, after all that, I'm not sure what else to add to. You know, I'm pretty much just going to pile on the love for Black Panther. It was well acted, well shot, and I liked the story, despite, you know, a lot like what Jason said, it was a little predictable. But I loved how they used the characters, because, you know, I was hoping we'd get to see M'Baku, and they did him wonderfully in the non-stereotypical way that he usually shows up in the comics.
Incredibly gutsy. Like, when I read a year ago, 2 years ago, that Man-Ape was going to be in this movie, I was like, you're shitting me. The
thing is, you can't do Black Panther without Man-Ape. He is the most iconic villain of Black Panther.
And they completely rehabilitated that character, and I admired the shit out of that.
And hey, while we're dishing out praise, how about some praise for how wonderfully loathsome Andy Serkis was in that?
he was scum.
He was great. I was surprised they killed him. I mean, it fit the. That was actually the only plot twist, really, was, I thought, when Claw actually died.
Yeah, Claw was absolute scum in this movie, and it was great.
Yeah.
Don't they always kill the bad guy in a Marvel movie? I mean, there's been one villain except for Loki.
There have been several villains who have survived.
Michael Keaton's alive and kicking.
That's true. Michael Keaton is alive and kicking.
Zemo survived Civil War.
Did he?
Yes. He was captured by Black Panther and handed over to the UN.
Yeah, the whole point of that is that Panther chooses not to kill him.
That's right. That he gives that speech at the end there. Okay, yeah, I remember that.
The thing that warmed my heart about that film is this is a film that gave us a superhero whose superpower is mercy and compassion. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. This is why I think that Panther, and I know that Doctor Strange doesn't get a lot of love in the general Marvel community. They don't rank it as one of the better films, but I know, Chris, you really love that film, and so do I. And
it was way better than a Doctor Strange film had any right to be.
I think that you and your anti-fantasy thing, I'm going to like put you out to dry one day for that. But anyway, Doctor Strange and Black Panther, I think, are part of this new, smarter way. I want to see more Marvel movies like those, which are, I think, braver and more courageous.
And fewer like Thor 2?
Oh, God, please.
Well, ultimately, I'd like to see a few that are less like Thor Ragnarok, where they're constantly playing dramatic scenes with a joke. That's where I really liked Black Panther. Here is, while they had humor in it, it was realistic humor. You could see people making those jokes at those times, meanwhile maintaining the seriousness of the serious scenes.
Yeah. Agreed.
Well, I know we're supposed to hear it to be Black Panther, but while we're talking about it, I do have to disagree with something my dear friend Jason said. I think Civil War does carry its message to the end. Because I think we agree on the central conflict is between the power of the government and the power of the individual.
Yeah.
But I think it goes right to the end. I think as befits a Captain America movie, it's very much on the side of the individual.
No,
and I think the end of that movie is showing you the terrible ends that you have to go to, even if you are fighting at least in your own mind for a worthy notion, the terrible things you actually have to do to stop to crack down an individual freedom.
Well, I see what you're getting at, but I'll respectfully disagree. But
I love you. You know that.
I do know that. It's a good film. I like Civil War. Don't get me wrong. I love it. And that final fight scene between Iron Man, Captain America, and Bucky is like phenomenal. Like, I love this. But I felt like the way that Tony kind of comes around to Cap's opinion before the final reel starts, to me, told us what this movie was ultimately. I think the people making that movie understood, well, of course, whatever side Cap is on is going to be the right side in that movie, because it's a Captain America movie, and I get that. But I think that they decided, well, we don't want to actually make the audience that agrees with Iron Man feel wrong at the end of the movie. And so we're going to have them come together and bring up a new dilemma, which is making it much more personal, right? That your best friend killed my mom kind of fight. But I'm glad that you thought that it followed through. That's cool.
And dead air.
And there was awkward silence. So I was waiting for a rejoinder.
In terms of the political context, I also thought Black Panther was as politically poignant as Winter Soldier, with that whole surveillance state. Not only that, but also the drone strikes, because S.H.I.E.L.D. was going about that whole taking out targets before they become a threat idea, which is counter to constitutional rights.
Yes, you're right,
this is fear, not freedom, and Black Panther maintains that political poignancy with its message that someone who has their heart full of hate should not be ruling the most powerful nation in the world.
Somebody with hate in their heart should not be allowed to rule, period. I don't want somebody like that on my school board or
I agree with you there, but this was the whole point.
I want to note that a lot of people are set. A lot of people are kind of rooting for Killmonger in this movie, and I see where that's coming from. But I think that one of the reasons why I like this film is because it doesn't explain what's going on with Killmonger's mentality until the end, but it telegraphs it. And what I'm getting at is that line when he says, "The sun will never set on the Wakanda Empire." Now, all of us that had world history in school or played Space 1889, we all know that line is the sun will never set on the British Empire. And so which is a symbol of colonialism. And so by halfway through the movie, we already understand that Killmonger has become the very thing he hates. Now, T'Challa will say this out loud in the last reel, but we already know this. We've already figured it out.
Well, hey, this is a point of the podcast where we need to awkwardly segue into talking about Mighty Protectors. So, Jack, tell us about Mighty Protectors. You guys won a BAMFC. Oh, you know what? let me talk about the BAMFsies real fast. We do it every year. It's an award specifically focused on superhero RPGs because, well, you know, all the big awards, the Emmys, the Origins, tend to go to fantasy games. So we created the BAMFsies at BAMFsies.blogspot.com. You can check it out. Had a great slate this year. And one of our judges' spotlight awards went from Steve Kenson, actually, went to Mighty Protectors. Can you give us the elevator pitch for it real fast, Jack?
Okay, well, Villains of Vigilantes is one of the first superhero role-playing games ever to be published. It was the first complete system RPG. It was something produced by Jeff D and I when we were in high school. There was a 1982 edition, which kind of expanded it and made it a full complete game. And so this is the new version of Villains of Vigilantes with 30 plus years of additional game design experience and comic reading behind us. It's much more of an open system. A lot of the original Villains of Vigilantes rules were, hey, here's an idea for a superpower and you can kind of make up how it works. And we give you a structured system to kind of build these powers yourself. It also has an elaborate universe background to it. So it really is a complete role-playing game.
Okay, cool, cool. And you can pick it up at RPG Now right now. What is, if I haven't tried Villains of Vigilantes before, why would I pick it right now over Mutants and Masterminds or, you know, any other? There's a bumper crop these days of superhero role-playing games. What sets it apart from the pack?
Well, it definitely has an old-school fun feel to it I'm not going to disparage any other kind of superhero game. I mean, I'm pretty much a rising tides lifts all boats kind of person as far as the genre. I was very impressed by all the product, all the stuff that was actually nominated for that award. It really kind of made me realize how vibrant that genre was. But we're like the original one of the original superhero role playing games. Jeff D and I actually have gone and work in the comics industry, and we've actually worked in superhero comics, so I think we kind of bring that perspective to it.
Okay, cool, cool. Yeah, I remember playing this actually way back in college. Boy, that's so long ago now. But back in the day. What are you going to say, Jason?
I was told once long ago that in V&V, the original idea was that you made yourself as a character and gave yourself superpowers. Is that right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, one of the things that was probably my idea, actually, and just the idea that when you read superhero comics, there's a lot of background about what the hero does when he's not wearing the costume and his regular day-to-day life. And in a role-playing game, that's really hard to invest any sort of belief or involvement in that. And so when I was running it, what I did is we kind of basically statted you out as a real person and then just amped you up with superpowers. And, you know, the group that I originally ran, we were all just friends in our original high school. So when fights would happen, they would take place at the school or at the nearby store or at this place or that place. And it really kind of gave it a real weight to it that just standard superhero games didn't have. I mean, we didn't do the whole thing where, like, you know, oh, so-and-so's girlfriend gets kidnapped and all that kind of stuff. I kind of felt that was a little distasteful to kind of like put some people directly, like have them running around as non-player characters, your mom and dad or your girlfriend or something. But it definitely took place in the real world and things that were going on in Chicago since we were living in where I still live outside Chicago right now, things that would happen in the news would be involved in our campaign. And I think when I was running this was like late 70s. This was back in the days when D&D was just three books and a cardboard box. And virtually everyone we got playing was probably their first role-playing game experience. And there were a lot of people to whom, you know, if you kind of just drop them into the world of a Tolkien, Robert E. Howard fantasy world, they kind of would have maybe just out of their depth, but they took to this like a duck to water, and a lot of them really became involved with the role-playing game hobby because, obviously it's easier to role-play yourself than it is to a more elaborate fantasy character, but it also kind of really bonded our player group. I mean, after we would go to school the next week after having a game session, and it was like,
you know, you would look at that person and go, ah, that's Shogun. Or whatever, like kind of like, yeah, we're part of the protectors. So that was one of the things I probably still do in my campaign from time to time. Although now role playing games is because it's a common day thing. It's not necessarily a crutch you need to provide a player to bring them into it. But I still think it's fun. Although it's obviously not for everyone. Some people really raise their eyebrows at doing it, and. Obviously, the point was never to stat you up and make you worry about how many push-ups you could do or things like that in terms of creating your character, but just to kind of pull in that background. I think it works for that.
Yeah. I ran a couple of games back in the day, but I never did it in B&B. I'm sorry, Chris.
Oh, it's okay. I just want to slip in another game history question while we're at it. Okay. Now, when I first got into gaming, B&V was one of the first games I got into and really enjoyed it. And for years, I believed and told people this was the first ever superhero RPG. And then I got on the internet. and then I got on the internet, and I've never actually seen a copy of it, but I've seen enough evidence to, I mean, it's like the moon landing. I wasn't there, but I believe it happened. Okay. There's this game I keep seeing references to, Superworld 2044.
Superhero 2044. It was actually published by Lou Zaki, and yes. I don't believe you see. I actually had a copy of it at one time, and I actually have read it from cover to cover. Yeah. I can't quite tell you whether or not this was meant to be a superhero role playing game, mm-hmm. or if it was meant to be like a sci-fi setting in some far distant future where everyone kind of wore costumes and had powers because they had. High technology devices and stuff. I remember the artwork in it had a lot of characters that looked very familiar to characters that were published.
Yeah,
that sort of thing. I mean, it was definitely that you know, when the hobby was very new and, mm-hmm. and things were just kind of coming out there. Yeah, it did actually beat us by about a year because Jeff and I went to. Gen Con, I think in 1978, and we had our handwritten manuscript for this game that we were going to show around to publishers. And of course, most publishers that were there, even people that were just, you know, printing things in their own garage were kind of like, ah, go away, kids, you bother me. And, but we had heard that Fantasy Games Unlimited was going to be there. And, this sounds like a knock on them, but it's actually one of the things that's kind of wonderful about them is that they literally would publish anything. They actually had a game called Bunnies and Burrows.
Yes,
kind of a Watership Down-esque kind of role playing game where you're playing rabbits.
Yeah, and, GURPS did an adaptation of it. They put out a GURPS version of Bunnies and Burrows.
Yeah, that's awesome. But I mean, I remember like we were looking at Bunnies and Burrows, thinking, ah, well, if they publish this, then we could get in the door here.
Yes, and so was very low.
Yeah. So and that's exactly what happened. And the next year we were out, but we went to that show and we saw Superhero 24, and oh my God, we crestfallen. We were like, oh no. But I mean, obviously, you know, just like the hobby can support more than one fantasy game or sci-fi game, and clearly, obviously, now there's a bazillions other superhero games out there. You know, there was room for us too, as it turned out.
Oh yeah, there's a whole lot right now.
Thank you for the information. I was curious if that had come out early enough to where it might have been an influence on your design. And really, I'm thrilled to have talked to somebody that actually has seen a copy of it.
Yeah, you know, it's like we're like UFO abduction survivors or something. It's a small group, but to be honest, I'm not even sure how. I mean, we've had people say that Villains Vigilantes was the first complete system role playing game. Well. I think that might be a little bit faint praise given what the system we'd come up with back when we were in high school in 1978. I mean, at the time we were doing it, we did our best with it. Where it really came from was the fact that Jeff actually got me into role-playing games, and we were both big comics fans.
And there was an argument we got into about who would win in the fight between Spider-Man and the Human Torch. And of course, Spider-Man is like, you know, he's agile, he's strong, he's this, he's that, he's everything. And I was like, yeah, but the Human Torch can go supernova and destroy all life on Earth. So we took a role-playing game that I was playing, because if you know Jeff, you know one of the things he's just amazingly into is the Professor M.A.R. Barker's setting of Empire of the Petal Throne. The he's actually republished it with cooperation of the Barker Estate, a game called Bethorn. So that's the kind of new millennium version of Empire of the Petal Throne that that Unigames, his other game company, publishes. But we were big into Empire of the Petal Throne, and so we took the rule system to Empire of the Petal Throne, and we literally hacked together a way to kind of make Spider-Man and the Human Torch in Empire of the Petal Throne, and that was our first excursion into superhero role-playing. And then little by little, we came up with new rules to how this worked and that worked. And the Empire of the Petal Throne system, not like in a most amazingly elaborate system, but that was kind of like the superstructure that little by little, as we built our own game system, we removed the Empire of the Petal Throne bits. Eventually, we had our game.
Hey, Jack, don't keep me in suspense. Who won the fight?
Spider-Man has got that flameproof webbing, and is Human Torch really going to blow up the whole world just to beat Spider-Man in a fight? Well, no. So yeah, Spider-Man won. When you're agile and fast and strong, that's a tough combination.
All right, fair enough. I just had to know. I had $5 on that. So all right, cool.
Well, you should have talked to me before the podcast. I could have tipped you with insider info.
No worries. So what kind of support are you guys planning? My Tractor's had a big successful Kickstarter last year. The book is out now. I guess you guys probably are putting out supplements, and obviously you've been running this campaign for decades, so I'm guessing you've got
Yes.
lore.
Yes, we do. We've got an adventure called Market Forces, which is going to be the next thing coming out. If you follow our Kickstarter, there's a whole chain of things that are going to be coming out. The thing after that is going to be, even though it's kind of in a little bit of a reverse order, the introductory adventure for Muddy Projectors, mostly because I'm still fiddling and tweaking and won't let it out of my hands, called Situation Room. There's going to be a book, a sort of a monster, like a monstrous end to the role playing, called the Abomination Realm. There's going to be a space book that's going to be coming out soon. So these are all the things that we're kind of working our way through. One of the big things that's happened recently is that we intend to when we started publishing D&D again back in like 2010. One of the first things we did is we provided like an open gaming license for it. So if you wanted to produce an adventure, you could use our system and just go with it. And of course, at the time, because we were engaged in our legal battles, that didn't really get the results we were hoping for. But now that we are back with this version that's completely ours, we have relaunched our licensing program. So anybody out there that wants to make a Mighty Protectors adventure, you can use the actual game system.
Yeah, I actually just read the verbiage on your license today. So this is the first announcement of that, right? We're making news right here today.
That's exactly right. It's hit our website today, but I don't even think we've issued a press release for it or any kind of update for it. It's just there if you look at it. So yeah.
Gaming history happening right now on the Banff podcast.
There you go.
You're here. All right, cool. Well, I'll probably take you guys up on that because I've got two adventures converted already by freelancers to Mighty Protectors. So,
holy cow, that's great.
Your fans are very fervent. I've had freelancers coming to me asking to convert stuff. So, I'll send you guys an email after this. We'll work something out. So,
terrific. You know, what I always liked about D&D, and I never played it when I was getting into superhero games the first time around. I was a Champions guy.
Mm-hmm.
But what I loved about V&D was the play aids, all of the beautiful color counters and the like that there was a big cardboard cutout of a space shuttle or something. And I must have used that thing in six different adventures, you know, like And I made it my own version of characters that you had counters for, like Manta Man and stuff. Like, I played Manta Man. I love the shit out of that guy. I have no idea what his stats in D&D were, but he was one of my favorite superheroes for a while. Anyway, do you have any plans of going back into the Play Aid or token market? Because I would.
The adventures we're putting out now are going to have like counters that come with them. So yeah, that's definitely continuing on. At some point, I suspect we may break down and just do a set of counters or like multi-purpose ones. Yep. The adventure books that we're coming out with now do include the counters.
Awesome. Good.
Sorry, yeah, I'm not going to mute. My bad.
Go ahead. Okay. Oh no! I was just going to say that was just one of the things of having Jeff be such a good artist and be in our campaign is that half the time I would be. This was a campaign that I was running at sometimes and he was running at sometimes, and when he went off to New Jersey to go to the Joe Kubert School, he was running it there. When you would play with him, you would describe a character, and as you're doing it, he's doing this really excellent drawing of it. Going, does he look like this? So, having him just create little counters like that, rather than have to go through the trouble of painting minis, he could rip up a set of those things in an amazingly short period of time.
Yeah, I mean, early champions, it was a great game. It has some very distinctive art. I remember Mark Williams' art and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, yeah,
which was wonderful, and I loved it. But D's art was so distinctive. And it really brought the visual imagery of B&V became identified with the game. Like, D's art and the game were linked in a way that we haven't seen, I think, until, if I can say this, Icons. The way that Icons had Dan doing all the art for Icons. And, and the visual art really became distinguished with the game system. It became linked to the game system itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got to admit that. What D... I have to admit, I have never played V&V. Mm-hmm. I made a character for it once, but the session never ran.
Everyone's got games like that in their past. That's why. Yeah.
But I owned Villains and Vigilantes because I fell in love with the Jeff D art, and he's one of the big influences on my own superhero style.
Oh, well, Jacob, you're right. I hadn't thought of that, but you're right. I can see that.
Yeah, well, Jack and Jeff have offered to run a session on the podcast sometime, so
yeah,
you might get a chance to play in a V&V game finally.
I yeah. would enjoy that.
But I get to play Batman. Sorry. I need to wrap things up. Get my kid from daycare. Want to ask everyone to send some good thoughts to Walt tomorrow about 2 p.m. Eastern time. He is having his nose surgically reset.
Oh, geez. Holy crap.
Yeah, his nose got very broken in a recent black belt test.
Ooh.
Wow.
Whoa. So,
please tell us he at least passed.
He passed.
Oh, good. Yes. Good.
Yeah, I think it's like it's either a sixth or eighth black belt. So, wow. Yeah, you don't pull the mask off.
Kill us through the internet.
You don't pull the mask off the Lone Ranger. You don't mess around with Walt. I
mean, he's too good of a guy to actually do it, but, it's there if he needs it.
That's right.
But if you were looking at his at the video, the webcam video, his nose looks slightly off center, and that's why. So tomorrow, 2 p.m., send a good thought to Walt because they're taking his face off, putting his nose back together, and putting it back on. So it's a whole thing.
Wild. All right. Good luck, Walt.
Yeah, Jack, thank you so much for coming out to talk to us.
Well, thanks for having me. This was great fun.
Yeah, this was a good time. Jacob, I hope you're having fun in Seattle.
I hope to be home soon. Thank you.
I hear they have coffee there. That's a thing, right?
Just a little bit. Okay. Just a little bit.
Jason, can we talk about your recent move, or is that still under covers?
You can see all my boxes in the back there. I think we can talk about it.
Okay. Oh, well, Jason's going to be working at Paizo in the near future, so congrats, Jason.
I'm the newest editor at Paizo Publishing, which is
crazy. Oh, congratulations.
Thank you very
much. Yeah, that's really very awesome news.
Super exciting, so I'll be out there soon.
Yeah. Congratulations, and I don't disagree with you on that point.
We agree on a lot of things, Chris.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
So when does the Paizo jumpsuit arrive?
I start on the 12th. So okay. I'll be issuing my state uniform by then.
All right, cool, cool. All right, well, hey, gonna wrap up. Chris, any closing thoughts before we hit the red button?
Yes, if you're on the popular Facebook thing that all the kids are on these days, please do a search for Ghost Show Press and come like our page. And
yeah, when are you launching, Chris? When is that project launch?
Well, you and Mike would know better than I.
Oh, Mike, I just was there to do the writing. Okay, so soon.
Let's talk after the podcast.
But for now, please go like Ghost Show Press. Great things coming from me and some of the best people in this industry.
Absolutely.
All right, listeners, thanks for tuning in. Jack, once again, thanks for joining us. And we will catch everyone again on the Banff Podcast.
Great. Thank you.
Bye.